The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. I love and embrace the true crime community. I am genuinely happy and grateful to have your support in my endeavors, my exploration and investigation in this somewhat dark and morbid subculture of death and murder and chaos. I feel at home here, as do many of you. We like to talk about things that many people find distasteful. I accept that. I embrace that. My interest is very much founded in famous cases of serial killers and shocking crimes that take place in suburbia, killings that shock us and horrify us because they are so random and so unexpected, so intrusive into our normal everyday life. But there is a subculture of crime that lives within our subculture of crime, and that is the story of organized crime. I have often birthed arguments on this subject. Are people who kill in the name of God serial killers? Are people who kill in the name of La Cosa Nostra serial killers? And what about people who might not kill, but who orbit killers, who enable killers, who do the dirty work that supports those killers? For me, they are also very important and very interesting characters in the annals of true crime. We're talking about one of those men today. This is the case of the murder of Fat Herbie Blitstein. Let's get into it.
He was a nice guy. I like Herbie.
Yeah.
He got killed twice once. Because they tried to rob him.
Was that just a whole thing? Was that just
a... No. That was from what I understand. They set him up and... One guy left the door open. So they went in the house and they waited for Herbie to come home. He was Herbie's business partner. Left the sliding doors.
I know 1997 might seem like a long time ago to some of you. I get that. It doesn't seem like that long ago for me. We talk a lot about the 1920s through the 1950s when it comes to the mafia, but the mafia still exists. It's much, much different than it was back then, but I can promise you, it's very much alive. I know a couple of gangsters and people who are gangster adjacent. The mafia is alive and well in Las Vegas, working under the umbrella of the Chicago outfit, which, yes, is part of the mafia. Every time I post a video about mobsters in the Chicago outfit, I get people saying the Chicago outfit is not the mafia. I don't know where you guys get that information, but yes, it's the mafia. It's the same thing. It's a different branch of the mafia, but it's the mafia. Its name in law enforcement is the Chicago Mafia, and the term outfit is just kind of a slang term that gangsters used in the 1920s. So anyway, throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was a well-known mobster known as Fat Herbie. Herbert Blitstein was born into a Jewish family in Chicago in 1934. Herbie started working what was known as the rackets in the 1950s. He was a loan shark. He was a bookmaker, and he soon rose through the ranks of the mafia to become lieutenant to Tony the Ant Spilotro. Tony the Ant was part of the infamous hole-in-the-wall gang, named that because of their method of robbing. They would drill through the exterior walls and ceilings of the homes that they burglarized. Tony the Ant was like Herbie in that he was born in Chicago and then migrated to Las Vegas in 1971 to manage the branch of the Chicago outfit there. Las Vegas was where Tony formed the hole-in-the-wall gang. The man you saw speaking at the beginning of this episode is Frank Collada, who came from Chicago to Las Vegas in 1979 to join Tony the Ant, and Frank was part of his crew. Frank just recently passed away from COVID in August of 2020 when he was 81 years old. Frank is a very famous mobster, especially in Las Vegas, but he's probably most famous for being the real-life mafia figure who worked with author Nicholas Pileggi on his book Casino, that later became a Martin Scorsese film, and what a great film it is. Fat Herbie was a character. He was only 6 feet tall, but he weighed over 300 pounds. He was known for this sweet goatee that was way ahead of its time, and he dressed very flamboyantly. He was a mobster's mobster. He also drove a 1973 Cadillac Eldorado, which is just a few years newer than my dream car, the 1970 Cadillac Eldorado convertible. So I kind of like old Fat Herbie. He had panache. He had flair, and I like that. He looked a lot like Luciano Pavarotti, the opera singer. People remember Herbie as a one-of-a-kind guy. He was very intimidating and could stare you down like no one else, but he was also happy-go-lucky and kind of a laid-back guy until he needed to be intimidating. Herbie married quite a few times, and while he was still in Chicago, he spent a lot of time at Phil Aldericio's bar called the Trade Winds. Phil was an enforcer and hitman for the Chicago outfit. Herbie also worked a lot with bookmaker Henry Kushner, who was convicted of bookmaking by the FBI and was sent to prison. Herbie then took over Kushner's clientele, and that got Herbie arrested and jailed. When he was released, he moved to Las Vegas to serve as the muscle for Tony the Ant Spilotro. Tony and his brother John ran the Gold Rush Limited jewelry store on West Sahara, and Herbie joined them in that venture upon moving to Vegas. They used that store as a front to fence stolen goods like jewelry and electronics. Herbie and Tony the Ant Spilotro came up together in Chicago, and the two were the prime suspects in the 1967 slaying of Chicago racketeer Arthie Booty Cowan, although law enforcement could never put a case together on that murder. They became most known for their participation in the Hole in the Wall gang. This gang consisted of Anthony the Ant, Tony Spilotro, his brother Michael, Fat Herbie, and a handful of thieves, including Peanuts Pangsco, Pops Pangsco, Frank DeLeggi, Michael LaJoy, Joseph D'Argento, Gerald Tomaszek, Peter Basil, and Carl Urbanati, who were all former Chicago associates. Vegas gangsters like Ernie DeVino and Crazy Larry Newman, Sonny Romano, and Frank Collada were a part of the gang, and they even had a former Vegas detective, Joseph Blasco, on the team who usually acted as a lookout. The gang was pretty successful for a long time, but the FBI was watching them. In 1981, the Hole in the Wall gang was busted for robbing Bertha's Home Furnishings on East Sahara. But Herbie managed to steer clear of a conviction on that, but he did go to prison for a few years for credit card fraud, a separate charge. He spent 4 years in prison and was released in 1991. Herbie was then added to Las Vegas' infamous Black Book, which is a list of people that are banned from all casino activity because of their criminal record or because of what law enforcement deems as an unsavory reputation. Las Vegas is very much still about the white hats versus the black hats. You know, the cops go the extra mile, but so do the crooks. After he was released for credit card fraud, Fat Herbie partnered with another gangster named Joe DeLuca. It was a business for buying, selling, and repairing cars called Any Auto Repair. DeLuca oversaw the business, and he and Fat Herbie used the cash that the legitimate business generated to finance their loan shark operation, and then the two split all of the profits. The problem was that DeLuca and Fat Herbie weren't giving a cut to the mob, and that would later become a very big problem, especially after Anthony the Ant Spilotro was murdered in 1986 back in Chicago, leaving Fat Herbie, his friend, without his protection. 1994. The FBI undertook an undercover investigation into the Las Vegas organized crime scene, and they titled this probe Operation Thin Crust. They created a bar, a social club, built by the FBI to entice known mobsters to come and hang out at. The FBI had enlisted the help of 37-year-old Anthony Angeletti, who was an ex-con with ties to the Genovese crime family in New York. But Anthony had turned informant for the FBI after he got into some really serious trouble in Los Angeles. The FBI had Angeletti lease a single-room space in an office park over by the Rio Hotel, which is about a mile west of the Las Vegas Strip. Now, this area, back in the 90s and early 2000s, was very much a locals area. My husband's uncle was the head pit boss at the Gold Coast for many years, and the Gold Coast was a place where a lot of locals and a lot of gangsters would hang out. That area where the Gold Coast is very close to the Rio, which is now more of a tourist destination. I guess it always has been, but it has always been a locals hangout and it has always had known ties to the mafia. The Rio is kind of past its heyday now, but back in the 1990s, it was a very hip place. They used to have this thing called the Sky Parade or the Sky Show. I'll find some photos of it. There was this track that ran on the ceiling of the casino, and a couple of times a night, these big parade float creations would run through the casino suspended from the track. The floats had girls on them throwing beads down to the casino floor, and they had lots of performers and dancers, things like that on them. Tourists and locals alike loved the Rio back then. In fact, Tony Sirico, the actor who played Polly Walnuts on The Sopranos, would often hang out at a restaurant inside the Rio back in the late 1990s, and I would see him there. I was a regular singer in the casino there at the Rio, and he was a regular at the stage that I used to sing at. He would always request that I sing him a Patsy Cline song. Tony Sirico was an actual mobster before he became an actor. He was associated with the Colombo crime family, serving under Carmine Jr. Persico. He would often hang around the Rio and the Gold Coast with other gangsters, and the FBI knew that this little part of Las Vegas, this kind of little two-block radius, was where a lot of wise guys hung out. And that's why they decided to open up their social club there. They called their social club Seabreeze, and they outfitted it with refrigeration units and a stove where their informant, Anthony Angeletti, prepared Italian food to be served in the club. Their plan worked. Seabreeze very quickly became a popular spot for local gangsters, but those gangsters had no idea that the place was completely wired with microphones, and everything they ever said at Seabreeze was being listened to and tape recorded. The federal agent in charge of Operation Thin Crust said, "The Seabreeze was a place where people could come in, sit down, and talk. Angeletti was a loud guy. People didn't like him, but he was a great cook, and it was a free meal to most of those guys." Another agent, a man named Michael Howe, told the Las Vegas Sun that at first he thought the social club was kind of a pipe dream. But lo and behold, 2 days after it opened, the who's who of La Cosa Nostra guys in Las Vegas were there. Another agent named Charles Maurer said to the Sun, "This is how La Cosa Nostra people spend their day. Their lifestyles are a lot different from ours. They get up in the morning, but they don't go to work. They go to the club and they sit and talk about old stories." Now, this agent, Charles Maurer, was placed inside Seabreeze working undercover, playing the part of a mobster. Not even Anthony Angeletti, the supposed owner of Seabreeze, knew that Charles Maurer was in fact an FBI agent and not an actual gangster. Now, it wasn't too long before Fat Herbie Blitstein became a regular at the social club. Herbie and his longtime mob associate, John Bronco, could often be found at Seabreeze. Herbie and John did time together in a federal prison in California in the late 1980s, and they were close. Bronco was a counterfeiter and was revered as a really tough mob soldier from Los Angeles. So Herbie and John were hanging around at Seabreeze with mobsters like Peter Vincent Caruso, Louis Caruso, no relation to Peter, and LA boss Peter Milano, who always had his brother, and underboss Carmine Milano with him. John Bronco would end up playing a pivotal role in the demise of Fat Herbie Blitstein, even though they were friends. 1996. The Seabreeze Social Club had been in operation for a while, and the mobsters who hung out there were more and more comfortable all the time. At first, they were somewhat guarded in what they said while they were at Seabreeze. But as the years wore on and none of them were busted for things they had talked about at Seabreeze, they were convinced it was a legitimate mafia safe place, and they started speaking more openly. John Bronco, Fat Herbie's friend, began to propose crimes to the other guys at Seabreeze. He wanted them to form a crew that would break into Becky Bennin's home. Now, Becky was the sister of Ted Binion. I've covered Ted on my other playlist, Dining with Death. Ted was the owner of Binion's Horseshoe. Fat Herbie and Ted Binion were really good friends, and Herbie knew that Ted's sister, Becky, lived an opulent lifestyle and kept a lot of valuable items in her home. John also wanted to burglarize the home of a very wealthy nightclub owner in Beverly Hills. Now, the rest of the gangsters were not so convinced that these kinds of high-profile burglaries were a good idea. And John was never able to convince the rest of them to go through with the burglaries, but John did convince Peter Caruso to help him strong-arm some Las Vegas escort services into paying them protection money a couple of times a year. Louis Caruso, who had several successful, legitimate businesses in Los Angeles, decided that he was going to bring some of those businesses to Las Vegas. Louis Caruso was an old school mobster. He was a stickler for the founding principles of the mafia, like loyalty and respect for the mob hierarchy. Fat Herbie didn't know it at the time, but Louis Caruso would end up playing a big part in his murder. May of 1996. Herbie Blitzstein was a regular at a strip club on Paradise Road across from the Hard Rock Casino, which used to be on the corner of Paradise and, I believe, Harmon. Herbie spent so much time at this club that he laid claim to a particular booth there. It was his booth. That's how he saw it anyway. One night in May of 1996, Herbie walked into the club, and there in his booth sat Louis Caruso with some other Los Angeles mobsters. Some people believe that Louis Caruso knew this was Herbie's booth, and he sat there on purpose to make a statement to Herbie, to start something with Herbie. Well, Fat Herbie didn't know Louis Caruso by sight. He only knew him by name. Even though both men had spent time at the Seabreeze, they hadn't crossed paths yet or met in person at the time. So when Fat Herbie walked in and saw a group of men sitting in his booth, he had the bouncer throw them out of the booth, but the men stayed at the club. The group of men were, of course, incredibly offended and stared Fat Herbie down as they sat in the club. Louis Caruso was seething with rage at this act of disrespect, and even though he stayed, he was stewing in anger. John Bronco, Herbie's friend, came in to join Herbie at the club, and Fat Herbie told John, "Those assholes were in my booth, and look, now they're staring us down." John Bronco knew immediately they had a huge problem because he recognized his fellow LA gangster, Louis Caruso. Bronco went up to Louis Caruso in the club and attempted to explain that Fat Herbie didn't know who he was and that he would have never had the group thrown out of his booth had he recognized who Louis was, but Louis Caruso was not hearing the apology. After the club incident, Louis took the matter to LA mob boss Peter Milano, which prompted Peter to call for a sit-down in LA in June, but the sit-down went south. At the sit-down, John Bronco explained to the boss that Fat Herbie meant no disrespect. But then a man named Vincent Cacci, who was serving as the arbitrator at the sit-down, looked to the back of the room where he saw two men. The men were Hell's Angels that Louis Caruso had brought to the sit-down for protection. So Louis Caruso is at the sit-down saying, you know, "I want revenge on this guy who disrespected me." John Bronco is there advocating for his friend, Fat Herbie. Well, Vincent Cacci did not like the fact that Caruso, Louis Caruso, had brought Hell's Angels to their sit-down. Vincent Cacci actually flew into a rage at Caruso, stating it was an act of immense disrespect to both him and the entire family, and he was furious that Caruso would bring two non-family members, two bikers that weren't part of La Cosa Nostra, to the sit-down. Louis Caruso's decision to bring the Hell's Angels to the meeting more than wiped out any disrespect that had happened to him that night at the club, and the sit-down decision went in favor of Fat Herbie and John Bronco. So Louis Caruso left the sit-down even angrier than he was before he got there. He felt wronged, and he wasn't going to be happy until he settled the score. He started to think about Fat Herbie and about all of the money he was making, and he decided he was going to eliminate this man who had shown him such disrespect, and then he was going to take over his rackets throughout Las Vegas. Fat Herbie was about to find himself without his longtime friend and confidant, who had also advocated for him at the sit-down. John Bronco had been talking at Seabreeze, and the FBI had been listening, recording everything he said. A Las Vegas escort service owner had gone to the police and told them that he had been roughed up and threatened by John Bronco, who was demanding that his business pay Bronco a monthly protection fee. Now, remember, John Bronco had talked about wanting to do this, about, you know, putting pressure on escort services to pay them protection fees. The FBI had him on tape admitting this. He had kidnapped this escort service owner and had beaten him badly. The FBI decided they were going to charge John Bronco. Bronco was already a felon, and because of the three strike rule, he was looking at a lengthy prison sentence. He later told the Las Vegas Sun, "I told the feds, I don't want this. I don't want to go back to that damn pen. I don't want my wife to go through what she had to do, starving to death while I'm pulling time." John Bronco turned against La Cosa Nostra and became an informant. The FBI had to be very careful about how they were going to proceed. They didn't want to spoil their long-standing undercover work, Operation Thin Crust, and they didn't want Seabreeze to be uncovered as an FBI sting location. Agents began to coach Bronco on how to work for them while he was still inside the mafia. The agents did not tell John Bronco that Charles Maurer, the FBI agent, was undercover in the club. They were playing things very close to the vest. They didn't even tell Angeletti, the supposed owner, that Bronco had turned informant. And they didn't tell Bronco that Angeletti was working with them either. So nobody knew what was really going on. The FBI had lost confidence that Angeletti was actually helping them. He had steered them wrong on a couple of issues, and they no longer believed they could trust him. So they started to rely more and more on John Bronco. October 1997. John Bronco went to the FBI agents running Operation Thin Crust and told them there was a plot by members of the Los Angeles and Buffalo mobs to steal from Fat Herbie Blitstein his loan sharking and other rackets. The FBI would later say that they were never aware there was talk about killing Fat Herbie. Well, that doesn't really pass the test for me. Did they think they were just going to take Fat Herbie's businesses from him and he was just going to roll over and let that happen? That's a little tough to believe. Gangsters don't do that. The agents had to know that there was some kind of violence planned against Fat Herbie. At this time, the FBI decided to tell John Bronco that Charles Maurer was not actually in the mafia, but was, in fact, an undercover FBI agent. The FBI put Fat Herbie's home under surveillance. John Bronco came back to the FBI and insisted the LA gangsters, they're going to kill Fat Herbie. Even though John Bronco had turned informant, he was still watching out for his friend. So with the FBI watching, Bronco went to the LA group and opposed the plan. They met at a Las Vegas Denny's on January 4th, 1997. Bronco told them he thought it was a dangerous time to carry out a hit. And when he left this meeting, he felt like the LA guys, Louis Caruso especially, agreed with him. Well, Louis Caruso had not even begun to forgive Herbie for the act of disrespect in the club, and he lied to John Bronco. He had every intention of killing Herbie. Caruso was so angry with Fat Herbie that he went to Herbie's business partner, Joe DeLuca, and convinced him that Herbie was ripping him off, that Herbie was taking more than half of the profits generated by the car business and the loan sharking business. Joe DeLuca then secretly partnered with Peter and Louis Caruso to take over Fat Herbie's rackets. Peter Caruso assured John Bronco that he was going to go to Fat Herbie and tell him, "It's all over for you. Don't bring your face to the garage ever again." And tell Fat Herbie that the LA guys were taking over his businesses. Now, that is not what they actually had planned. Caruso hired mob associate Alfred Morello to take out Fat Herbie. He paid Morello $10,000 and he kept $6,500 of that money and used the rest to hire two associates, Richard Friedman and Anton Davi. Fat Herbie left on a vacation for Mexico, not knowing that his fate was already decided and his days were numbered. January 6th, 1997. A friend of Fat Herbie's, who had a key to his house, enters Fat Herbie's home on Mount Vernon Avenue. Herbie had missed an appointment, which wasn't like him. There, this friend saw Herbie Blitstein slumped over in a chair. He approached him, but he could see he was dead. Now, at first, this friend believed Herbie had suffered a heart attack, and he called 911. When paramedics arrived, they found the actual cause of death. A single small caliber bullet wound to the upper body. That Herbie Blitzstein had been executed. An autopsy later revealed that Herbie had been shot execution style while bent over in a kneeling position and had then been placed in the chair. Earlier that day when Fat Herbie was away at work, Cookie Caruso and Anthony DeLulio broke into his house using access codes given to them by Herbie's business partner, DeLuca. They robbed the house of all of its valuables, including dozens of uncut diamonds, a box full of Rolex and Cartier watches, bricks of gold bullion, and more than $100,000 in cash. They then left through the side door, leaving it open for the two assassins who would show up later. Getting the all clear, Antonio Davi and Richie Friedman entered Fat Herbie's house and waited for him to come home from work. Herbie arrived around 6 o'clock, where he was attacked by the duo and forced to his knees. Before Richie Friedman shot him, Fat Herbie looked at the two men and said, "Why me?" They didn't answer him. They did what they were there to do, and they propped him up in his white leather recliner and left. Both shooters were later convicted for the murder of Herbie Blitzstein. Antonio Davi was released from prison in 2015, and Richard Friedman was scheduled to get out of prison in 2019, but I couldn't find any information as to whether or not that actually happened or to where he is now.
In 1981, several of Spilotro's crew noticed the hole-in-the-wall gang were caught in the act of a burglary, but Blitzstein remained free until a 1985 credit card sting operation.
Officers working in teams of three swiftly worked simultaneously to arrest 28 people and search a number of businesses and residences.
Close friend of Anthony Spilotro, Herb Blitzstein, was also arrested. He allegedly made a purchase with the bogus cards.
Between the bust and the trial, Spilotro was murdered in Chicago, but Blitzstein still had the association.
Did you do anything different?
He has no further comment.
By the mid-90s, Blitzstein again had some small-time rackets working, as well as a legitimate business, any auto repair, on Fremont, and had been targeted for entry into the Black Book of persons excluded from gaming establishments. The campaign was moved when, in January of 1997, Blitzstein was found shot to death in his Las Vegas townhome.
Fat Herbie Blitzstein and the Hole in the Wall gang have become infamous in pop culture. In the classic mob film Casino, Anthony the Ant Spilotro is played by Joe Pesci, and Fat Herbie is portrayed as kind of a cross between himself and Frankie Blue Bluestone, played by actor Brett McCormick in the role of Bernie Blue. It's a great film. I had to watch it after writing this episode because I love it. A lot of people feel that this era of the mafia was the last of its kind. Law enforcement is much more adept at tracking organized crime, but that doesn't mean it has been eradicated in Las Vegas. Vegas is still full of colorful characters and dangerous characters like Fat Herbie. They might not be as easy to find as they once were, but you can spot them if you know what to look for. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Hit the like button if you like the video and make sure to subscribe to the channel if you would like to support me. It helps a lot. Stay safe and be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Get 15% off a set of Brake Mess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!